Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
Welcome to the Cullen Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies' profile. Now, the Cullen Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Corey Fleck here, your host for these first couple segments. We will have Chad back with us in the back half of this show. And boy, oh boy, there's a lot for us to talk about this week because of the fact that, look, we all knew that this week was more data heavy and central bank heavy, but I don't think a whole lot of us expected the pivot that we got out of the Fed and the pivot party that followed through for the markets. It's a very interesting time for markets to recap what happened on the back of the Fed statement, and even more so Jerome Powell's press conference, but also what some of the other central banks did. In the first half of the show, I'm going to be chatting with Mark Chandler, managing partner at Bannockburn Global Forex, to focus on what the Fed did and what the implications could be throughout not just next year, but the next couple of years. And in the last half of the show, we're going to be focused more on the resource sector for all of you investors, especially in the stocks. Now, as I mentioned, I'm chatting with Mark Chandler. Mark, I have to give you credit. I read over your website, mark2market.com, every week and almost every day. And the day before the Fed meeting on Wednesday, so on Tuesday, the headline article that you put out outlined the fact that we could see a Fed pivot just based on some of the inflation data that we saw earlier in the week. You're one of the few that was truly on board with this that hadn't been on board, let's say, before this meeting or even in this whole last year. So, Mark, I got to ask you, what caused this? What caused the Fed to pivot in your eyes?
Yeah, thanks, Corey. They say better to be lucky than smart, and I think it was just a question of trying to connect these dots. And I had thought that the Federal Reserve was pushing in this direction. That is the direction. I'd put it like this. Two times you stand pat, that's a pause. You stand pat three times, that's a halt. And I think that even the hawks on the Fed, like Governor Waller, had seemed to be content with being patient, just standing pat. And I thought that would signal the end of a tightening cycle, which is quite remarkable. Before the Fed tightened, the market was sort of upset that they're critical of it because they thought the Fed should have ended QE earlier, should have raised rates earlier. So we get this, but the Federal Reserve, of course, at the time, like many of us, including myself, thought, well, inflation is just transitory. And lo and behold, inflation gets higher than people thought, quicker than people thought, and now it's all these other reasons, globalization, de-dollarization, higher oil prices. They came out with all these stories about why inflation is going to stay high and why it was structural, and yet it's begun falling. And so I also thought that behind the Fed's decision to pause for the third time, meaning it's going to be done, was the fact that Q3 growth over 5%, unsustainable. And I was looking at relative sharp decline in activity here in Q4. And I thought if someone like me could see it coming, I think that the Fed would see it as well. And I think that that's a striking thing about the Fed statement. Despite the dramatic response, the Fed statement barely changed. What it changed was its assessment of the economy, and said that the economy is growth activity is slowing from a strong pace in Q3. And they said that inflation has eased over the past year. They recognized that inflation had fallen over the past year. That's a new phrase, has eased over the past year, but remains elevated, a repeat of what they said before. They also added one other sentence, one other word, actually, in the rest of the whole statement, one word that also softened their stance, made it a little bit more dovish, and that is, they said, in determining the extent of additional policy firming. That's what they said before. In determining the extent of additional policy firming, this time they inserted the word any. Sounds kind of small, like we're really like nitpicking here, but this is the kind of, when people want to try to understand the Fed and get into like Fed speak and Fed thinking, you really have to take every, I have to assume that every word has conveyed some meaning. And by modifying additional policy, by saying any additional policy, it softens it, meaning that the Federal Reserve also thinks it's done. I think that what surprised me from this Federal Reserve statement and Powell was that up until now, the soft landing view, which is you can get inflation back down towards target without causing a recession or without triggering a sharp rise in unemployment. And I think the Fed had been hopeful. Of course, policymakers, investors, everybody seemed to be hopeful of a soft landing. But this particular statement and this particular press conference, I think, was the most passionate, full-throated embrace that the soft landing is here. And Powell made a comment during the press conference where he acknowledged that the Fed saw the risk of being too high for too long and that they were going to work against that. So in order to get a soft landing, it's not only good enough, it's not only sufficient to raise rates, shrink the balance sheet, but you also have to be quick in turning because of the lag time. If the Fed were to wait too long, then they'd be stuck with their recession and they'd be blamed for it.
All right, Mark, we do need to carry this over to the markets because, look, it was a pivot party that almost all sectors were doing well. We saw big rotation in the small caps, commodities, precious metals did well, energy did well. The only loser was really the U.S. dollar. Even bonds got a buy as we saw yields continue to move down, the 10-year move under 4%. Big question is, is this going to continue? Because the markets are ending the week on kind of their back foot, but it's still going to be a good week for markets. And we did have Fed head Williams pushing back on Friday, trying to clarify, actually saying almost the exact opposite of what Powell said in terms of, hey, there still might be a rate hike. We don't need to talk about rate cuts yet. It didn't seem to have the same impact on the markets as Powell's comments. What do you think about this pivot party and just how bullish everybody seems to be?
I think the important thing I think about this pivot is it's not just the Federal Reserve. I'd say the interesting thing is that several other central banks met this week, and it seems like everybody acknowledges that even though there's some risk that they raise rates, they got to keep that play that up. I think on balance, everybody thinks the ECB is done, the Bank of England is done, the Swiss National Bank is done. And this week, Norway was the only central bank to hike interest rates, and they're done. And so I think that we're at the end of the post-COVID monetary tightening cycle that was not just in the U.S. but global. So we've got a global reduction in interest rates. And I think that how the markets responded was that turns out that the rise in interest rates was a bigger weight on equity markets than maybe people thought. Not only in the U.S. making, say, some of the indexes, some of the measures near record highs, but the same thing is true in Japan. Same thing is true in Europe. Very strong stock market rally despite weak economies. It's really the falling interest rates as a driver. I'm concerned that what Williams said today, trying to push back, I don't think that anything that I heard from Powell did not say that there was a 100% chance that the Fed would cut rates in March. And yet that is what the market is pricing in. Even now, after Williams, the market's pricing in about an 80-85% chance of a hike in March. That does not seem to be I can't blame the Fed for that. I don't think there's anything that the Fed said to make it sound like a rate cut was imminent. So I am concerned then that the pushback will be more serious. So I just don't think the economy is rolling into the kind of state that would get the Fed to cut rates in Q1. And I think that's what Williams is telling us. And so to me, what that means for the market is that we should expect that this has been a bit of an exaggerated move on interest rates. Maybe the 10-year we should expect to go back above 4%. Maybe it's 4.25%. And so as interest rates back up, I think the dollar might get a bit of traction. It may bounce as well. And I think that that'll weigh on the stock market.
All right. Well, Mark, I'll follow up with those comments in the next segment. We're out of time for this segment, so everyone stick around. I'm going to be right back with Mark Chen.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.
you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Do the letters IRS give you anxiety? I'm Dan Pilla. I've defended people from the IRS for more than 40 years. My book, How to Get Tax Amnesty, created the tax resolution industry and is responsible for helping hundreds of thousands of people. It can help you too. If you're a non-filer or facing IRS enforcement right now, your case is unique. You need real help, not cookie-cutter advice. My clients get my personal attention. Buy my book at danpilla.com and get a free consultation directly with me. That's danpilla.com. Let's start solving your tax problem right now.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
As the cold and flu season approaches, Silver Lungs is ready to help you and your family through the toughest of the year by supporting your immune system and overall health. From our best-selling colloidal silver generating system to our entire line of silver-based skin gels, nasal sprays, soaps, and silver solutions, Silver Solutions remain one of nature's most powerful and least expensive antibacterial agents. Now you can produce your own for pennies a day in the comfort of your home using the breakthrough technology of the Silver Lungs Generator. Learn more today at www.silverlungs.com.
I spend a lot of time in the garage, but even more time in the rain, sleet, and mud. In 95, I helped tow your moving trailer. In 05, I helped you get out of a ditch. Yeah, I know I'm a bit rusty, and sadly in 09, it was sparks from me, your handy chains, dragging behind your truck that accidentally started a wildfire.
Sparks from dragging chains can start a wildfire. Spark a change, not a wildfire. Visit SmokeyBear.com, brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Hi, this is Dr. Joel Wallach, the Mineral Doctor. You've heard me talk about 90 for Life for years. 60 minerals, 16 vitamins, 12 amino acids, 2 fatty acids. You may not know this, that I've actually designed Arthrodex for animals. That's right. Your pets need 90 for Life, too. Get this essential pet product by calling 877-279-9422. That's 877-279-9422. Again, 877-279-9422. Hi, this is Dr. Joel Wallach, the Mineral Doctor. You've heard me talk about 90 for Life for years. 60 minerals, 16 vitamins, 12 amino acids, 2 fatty acids. You may not know this, that I've actually designed Arthrodex for animals. That's right. Your pets need 90 for Life, too. Get this essential pet product by calling 877-279-9422. That's 877-279-9422. Again, 877-279-9422.
Your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report, and I am continuing to chat with Mark Chandler. Now, Mark, you made a case at the very tail end of that last segment that you could see rates rebound a little bit. You thought the move into bonds, so the drop in interest rates, were a little bit overdone. Even the dollar could rebound a little bit here, but big picture, even if the 10-year moves to, let's say, 4.25%, that's still a long way off of 5% that we were staring at just a couple of months ago. And the dollar, it moved down drastically. Yeah, it bounced at the end of the week, but it's still in the 102 region. If we do get at least a little, I guess, turn in this pretty aggressive trend higher that we've seen for many markets, would that just be short-term weakness in what seems like longer-term uptrends?
Yeah, I think that's what more or less what it's going to be. We've had this such a strong move. You know, less than a month ago, the narrative, what I'd say was the consensus or the conventional narrative from Wall Street was that the bond vigilantes were going to make a stand in the face of a larger, endless U.S. budget deficit. All the supply, the bond vigilantes had their fill. And instead, we've gone the exact opposite way. And so sharply, I think it's just begging for top pickers, those bond vigilantes who got their fingers burned, try to make another stand.
Okay, so it does sound like a more bullish outlook than here. What could turn this around then? Would it simply be higher inflation data, simply because that's what the Fed seems so focused on? Or would it be weaker economic data, although it sounds like the Fed is already expecting that?
So the risk to this, right? Despite like all these great minds focused on the markets and everything, and how few, no one really predicts things for, you know, it's very difficult. Maybe it's like Yogi Berra. It's difficult to make predictions, especially about the future. And so the range of possibilities, and I look at the end of the year, I look at where people thought, you know, consensus views, medians and surveys, where people thought things were going to end this year. And very rarely are we close. And I often think when the consensus is close, it's because it's lucky rather than like smart about it. Yeah. I mean, I think that we should expect a short-term move. But I think that in the bigger picture, I think what's going to happen is we shouldn't expect really good news from Europe, the UK, that is, the EU, anytime soon. Maybe not until late next year at the earliest. Japan is struggling. You see this, despite having a currency that's about 50% undervalued by some purchasing power parity metrics, the Japanese manufacturing sector is still contracting. We just had that PMI, flash PMI for December. The manufacturing sector is still contracting. And so I think that we should expect a relative slow growth next year, maybe not a recession in the U.S. And that's the other thing, you know, we haven't talked about it. Next year, 2024, over half the world is going to go vote. Mostly it's national elections, but there's a bunch of local elections too. We begin off the year, a key one would be in Taiwan, but not only do we have the U.S. election, EU parliamentary elections, India has elections. So we basically, a lot of elections, and I already think that the shadow of the elections is beginning to hang over the markets. And so I'm looking at what happens during the fourth year of a presidential term in the U.S.? So what happens the year of the U.S. election? Very rarely does the stock market go down. So that's a regularity. It's not like a law. It's not like must be the case. But it just gives me a small bias that we probably should not expect a big sell-off in stocks next year. That it could be that seasonally or cyclically small up year. And what does it mean about the Fed policy? I think that Fed policy, we've seen the Fed change rates. A lot of people have this in their head that the Fed can't change rates too close to the elections. And yet when you really look at the historical record, Fed has changed rates, adjusted policy in September ahead of a November election, and it's adjusted policy in November after the elections. And that's what could happen this year. We have a September FOMC meeting. We do not have one in October. And then we have one again a couple of days after the election. So it doesn't necessarily affect the pace of what the Fed's going to do. They've done it. The historical record shows they've done adjustments within that framework. And the other economic regularity, I think, is that very rarely does the economy contract in the fourth year of a presidential term. So I'm thinking that the U.S. economy grows below trend, which the Federal Reserve trend growth means non-inflationary growth level, which they say is about 1.8%. And I think for most of the year, we'll grow below that. And then I think that we get the recession when everybody gives up on it for being wrong for a couple of years. It comes in 2025 when whoever's in the White House, you know, that new president has to deal with it.
Oh, how many times have we seen that, though? Hey, the new president, the recession gets pushed off onto them, and well, it's going to be a pretty nasty year, I think, anyway, with all these elections going on, especially in the U.S. Let's talk currencies, and let's also talk gold then, because, look, there's no denying that the U.S. dollar got crushed on the back of the Wednesday statement and press conference. Gold did really well. Some of the gold stocks, especially the majors, did really well. What stood out to you in terms of any currency moves and with gold, please?
Yeah, sure. Let's begin with gold. You know, for me, a lot of people you've talked to, Corey, probably tell you that the reason gold is high, the big buyer has been central banks. And people say this is de-dollarization, all that. But I don't know if I really buy that as de-dollarization, partly because some of the biggest central banks buying gold are allies of America's, like Singapore, Poland. China's buying gold, but when you think about that they have $3 trillion of reserves, the amount of gold they're buying, we're talking about single percentage point changes. So I don't see it like that. I tend to think about gold the way I do, similar with currencies. If you tell me the direction of the dollar and the direction of U.S. interest rates, I have a good idea, not always right, but a good idea of where gold's going. So the big rally we had in gold, that had been Wednesday and Thursday, I think, was because of a big drop in interest rates. Big drop in the dollar, buy gold. But if I'm right about a pushback against these low interest rates, that the market's getting, the central banks don't want the markets to ease for them so early. If they don't really want to ease rates, let's say even if they want to ease rates in March, by the market doing it now, it really could be self-defeating, could fuel the exact inflation that central banks thought they started to put that genie back in the bottle. So I think that gold comes back down and tests those recent lows, call it 1975 or so. That 200-day moving average spot gold is about 1955, and that's when my level has been about 1950 as a reasonable buying opportunity if you think that gold is going to go higher as interest rates around the world begin falling sometime next year. Currencies, different
story. On that point, sorry, Mark, on that point, though, that is still long-term bullish gold then, right? Because if all central banks are going into an easing scenario, even if markets do well, it does look like gold can do well on the back of that as well.
Exactly. So in the big picture, I think that the dollar topped out, not this year, but really late last year, September, October. Remember sterling down at 103 to the dollar, a record low. A euro is around 96 cents. So, I fully agree that looking out to 2024, I'd say lower interest rates, a broadly weaker dollar could help lift gold, and to really retest that high we saw earlier this month at 21.35.
All right, Mark. Thank you very much. I think that brings us up to speed on how you see the markets playing out through not only just next year, but into the following year and the significance behind what the Fed did this week, as well as how it plays into other central bank policies. Mark, thank you very much for your time. Hope you have a great rest of your weekend. Everyone, stick around. I'm going to be right back with a bit more of a focus on the resource stock side of things.
Corey, good luck, everybody. Happy holidays.
To find out more about today's guests, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Most folks don't realize this fact. Our country is only 4 missed meals away from chaos, and those meals can vanish fast. In a national emergency, fragile supply chains break down and will wipe grocery store shelves clean in a matter of hours. Before this happens, there's something you should do today. Let's stock up on emergency food storage. My Patriot Supply is the company millions of American families trust for their emergency supplies. You should, too. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure their best-selling 3-month emergency food kits. Each kit contains delicious breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. My Patriot Supply also sells large solar generators, gravity-powered water filtration systems, off-grid room heaters for when the power goes out, heirloom seeds, and other survival necessities. Order by 3 p.m. and your items ship the same day, fast. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com right now. Those who know what's coming, prepare before the chaos starts. MyPatriotSupply.com.
USA News Update. We begin in the Middle East this half hour, where the IDF says soldiers shot and killed 3 Israeli hostages by accident in the heat of battle in Gaza. USA's John Schaefer on the story.
Israeli forces have acknowledged responsibility for unintentionally causing the death of 3 hostages held by Hamas during a conflict in northern Gaza. IDF troops fired upon them after initially perceiving them as a threat. This occurred in a combat zone where soldiers frequently encounter terrorists and suicide bombers.
We are watching a potentially powerful storm churning toward the East Coast. It will be very wet in Florida, where flooding expected, and then the system moves up the East Coast to the Carolinas and heads to Virginia and Washington, D.C. This all coming as many people booked on flights to head home ahead of Christmas, and many folks planning road trips to visit family and friends. And I'm Laura Winters, USA News.
Let me tell you a story about Bill. Bill was a normal guy in his 50s. He had back surgery about 2 years ago. Bill was in a lot of pain. He dealt with his pain by taking the Percocets his doctor prescribed for him. Bill took more and more and more of them to help with the pain, until one day the prescriptions weren't enough to get rid of Bill's pain. Then one day Bill found someone to help him get rid of the pain with illegal drugs he didn't need a prescription for. Fast forward to today. Bill lost his job and his family. The only thing he does have is his drug dealer. If you know Bill's story and you don't want to end up like Bill, call the Detox and Treatment Helpline right now to get away and get treatment. 800-296-1327. 800-296-1327. 800-296-1327. Call right now. Help is standing by. 800-296-1327.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veterans, nonprofits, and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.
Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. And as promised in the back two segments here, we are going to focus a little bit more on the resource space, especially when it comes to the underlying stocks, as we are chatting with Matt Geiger, managing partner at MJG Capital. Now, Matt, before we get into a focus on the resource sector, I do want to talk about the broader markets here, because look, it has been an impressive rally. This whole year, the markets have done fairly well, but it's just been in the last couple months when markets bottomed kind of at the tail end of October and have moved pretty much straight up. We have the Dow at all-time highs. The S&P is very close to all-time highs. I guess a lot of this is on the back of this whole pivot party from the Fed and locking in, or at least saying that they will be cutting rates next year, even if things seem to be going pretty well. But overall, investors seem to have rotated money out of money market funds into broad equities. Matt, what do you take away from this environment?
Well, it's good to be with you, Corey. And, man, I agree with you. It's been a wild 6 weeks in particular since right at the tail end of October, the S&P is now up over 15% over that period. And it may not seem this way to many of the, you know, long-only listeners that may be listening to this podcast, but I'm viewing this actually as a classic Max Payne event. And who's feeling the pain? Institutions primarily, those that are either market neutral or net short the market. Definitely some short squeeze activity going on here. And then additionally, mom and pop investors, many of which are still heavy in terms of cash, dating all the way back to the COVID shakeout in 2020. So I'd say that giant sucking sound that you hear is retail investors throwing the rest of their dry powder into equities, really in FOMO fashion. And these FOMO moves, while they can you know, continue with some duration, rarely end well. So I'm quite dubious by the extent of this move. Of course, Powell's comments were far more dovish than many expected. But if you looked at expectations, both the Fed's dot plot and just expectations amongst the market generally, folks were already expecting rate cuts next year. Maybe Powell was a bit more direct in affirming that view. You know, it's always worthy hearing it from the horse's mouth. But I personally am quite surprised by the extent of the reaction that we saw on the back of the last Fed meeting. I mean, this does beg the question, is now a good time to be piling into the U.S. Indices in particular? And, I mean, the answer is a resounding no, as far as I'm concerned, at least for those that aren't short-term momentum traders. And there's a few factors to consider. First, the U.S. market, just looking at the U.S. market itself historically on absolute terms, the Buffett indicator is one thing to look at, which is the U.S. GDP relative to the combined capitalization of all U.S. Listed equities. And we are just below all-time highs. I will concede we're a little bit below where we were in November of 2021, but just below all-time highs and way above the peak seen before the dot-com bust or the great financial crisis in 2008. So we're certainly not cheap relative to where the U.S. market has been historically. We're also not cheap relative to other asset classes. Just look at the U.S. stock markets relative to global indices, or an even more extreme disparity is the U.S. stock market relative to emerging equities. So those that truly feel an urge to be deploying into equities right now, there are far better places to be looking, in my opinion, than the broader U.S. markets. And finally, just look at historical price behavior of U.S. markets when it comes to a Fed hike cycle. Historically, what we'll see, it's not the first hike that causes a major crash, nor is it the pause. It's actually the first cut. And this has occurred time and time again. So it's quite possible that it's different this time. There are no guarantees. History does not always repeat. But what we're seeing here appears to mirror pretty classic behavior of past cycles, where the market actually rallies very strongly into the pause, and then the pain occurs when we first see the cut.
Yeah, man, I think that's such a key point, because a lot of people thought it was the hiking that was going to be the problem, but it's actually when you start cutting, because it means that the Fed is seeing something under the surface where there could be economic weakness. And in all reality, that's what they wanted to see, and they are getting that in the real estate market and manufacturing and other sectors. But when we do start seeing the cuts, or just the market anticipating them and hearing it, as you say, from the horse's mouth, it has given all markets a big rally. It wasn't just the general markets. We've seen that in the cryptocurrencies. We've seen that in commodities. We've definitely seen that in precious metals. We saw gold do an about face from pulling back for all of last week to rocketing back higher again this week. What do you make of the disconnect, though, that we still see in the junior mining sector? While most of the metals and commodities are running, and that's on a weak dollar and rates continuing to pull back, we just noted before this call that the 10-year has already pulled back down below 4% again. We haven't seen that in a while. That is helping the underlying metals, but it's not really moving the mining stocks as much. What's your lay of the land on the junior resource sector?
Well, in the short term, I'm actually very bullish. I mean, I think it's clear that the animal spirits are out more generally in financial markets. And I would not be surprised at all to see a very strong rally into the new year here. And I think this rally could continue as long as broader financial markets remain buoyant. Now, my concern remains that the juniors will get whacked, as they always do, without fail, whenever the broader financial markets next roll over. And that will occur. My expectation is it will occur next year. Perhaps it will be longer than that. Perhaps it will be just a few months from now. But we will see another period of financial pain, and when that occurs, the juniors will get whacked. In that period in between, however, I think there's a ton of catching up to do. Because as we discussed on our last call, I actually was expecting quite a bit of weakness in the junior patch this year. But with the expectations that the broader market would be the driver of that pain. What I certainly did not foresee was the juniors getting whacked to the extent that they did, while, you know, broader financial markets, broader equity markets continue to march towards all-time highs, especially as we're seeing in the United States. So I do foresee an explosive rally, some catching up, so to speak. I mean, we're right at the tail end of tax loss season here, and I think that can continue until we see the next, you know, major market dislocation. Think the COVID 2020 panic, or even the, you know, period in Q2 and Q3 of last year when the Fed hike cycle began. So I've actually gotten quite a bit more aggressive than I anticipated. You know, just in September, we were in double digit cash positions. we're now in the low single digits. Of course, if this rally does materialize, then I will look to increase our cash to a more conservative posture with the expectation that there will be pain when the broader markets roll over.
Matt, what about the major stocks, though? Because look at how much Newmont has moved. We're recording this about halfway through the day on Thursday, and just if you take into account the moves on Wednesday and now half of Thursday, Newmont's up almost 10% on high volume, too. How much will the juniors benefit from? Who knows? This could be a significant uptrend in the majors.
Right. Well, I mean, if this is a significant uptrend in the majors, then we will see the trickle down effect occur. That's how the strongest moves generally materialize. You need a few ingredients. You need intense pain and absolutely bombed out sentiment. And that's certainly what we saw in September, October, November period. And then you need the larger, more liquid names to lead. And if that continues for a sustainable period of time, and animal spirits remain high, you do see the trickle down into the juniors, and that's when you can see those explosive moves really materialize.
Oh, you are right. When that money starts filtering down, just because of how small the sector is, it can really get those stocks moving. But it is a process, and who knows where we're at in that process, and even what type of market we're dealing with these stocks, because, well, the majors, they have done a bit better over the last few months. But they're still well off of their highs. A big disconnect from where the underlying gold price is. And then if we carry that over to silver, that's still about half of its all-time high from over a decade ago. So there is this push and pull that is constantly, I know, on the minds of a lot of resource stock investors because of the fact that there haven't been a ton of gains to harvest within these stocks. A select handful of stocks have done pretty well, but I think we're all waiting for another big story to drive this market or just a full change in sentiment. More that we will talk about next segment, Matt. So everyone stick around. We are going to be right back.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
The Silver Lungs Generator is the only all-encompassing professional class product for producing endless colloidal and ionic silver solutions right from the convenience of your home. With recent regulations threatening the sale of silver-based supplements, now you can secure yourself and your family by producing your own silver solutions anywhere, anytime. You can have the peace of mind knowing that you can create endless supply of silver anytime, anywhere, for any application. The Silver Lungs Generator is a one-time purchase that requires no maintenance nor replacement parts for the life of the unit. This product was designed to be an invaluable part of your vital preparations. For a detailed report on the differences between ionic silver, colloidal silver, and what most silver solution manufacturers are producing, please visit our website at www.silverlungs.com for more information on why you should be producing your own silver solutions right from your home forever.
Do you know someone with a drug or alcohol problem? Get help now. Insurance may cover everything. Stop the drug and alcohol nightmare. Call 800-284-0523. Learn how through the Family Medical Leave Act, you can leave your job without losing your job. Locations everywhere. Get immediate help for drug and alcohol problems. Call now. 800-284-0523. 800-284-0523.
Wellness and self-care doesn't have to be complicated.
So keep it simple and take good care of yourself with Sunny Bay heating pads. Our heating pads soothe pains in the neck, back, and shoulders while relaxing muscles and increasing blood circulation. Sunny Bay heating pads have always been made in the USA and hand-filled to perfection with the highest quality materials. Sunny Bay heating pads are the perfect wellness gift for loved ones or yourself. See all of our high-quality products at sunny-bay.com, including heated body pads, neck pillows, heated neck and body wraps, and our stress-reducing lavender line. They're all affordable, durable, and in stock now and ready for immediate shipping direct from sunny-bay.com. Read our trusted, authentic, and real reviews at sunny-bay.com or just search for Sunny Bay Heating Pad. To your good health and wellness from Sunny Bay.
Tehebo Tea Club's original Pure Pouty Arco Super Tea helps build red corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. The first word is shop, spelled S-H-O-P, then the word super, and then the word tea. The complete website is shopsupertea.com or call us at 818-984-6100 Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-984-6100. Shopsupertea.com.
Here we are wrapping up the weekend edition of the KE Report, and as promised, continuing to chat with Matt Geiger, managing partner at MJG Capital. Now, Matt, one trend we have seen within resource stocks is private equity, royalty, streaming companies, them funding some of these advanced projects, as well as trying to move some of these assets forward as being one of the only sources of capital available to companies right now, because we have seen some larger deals in the almost $100 million ranges. I know that doesn't at least get these projects built, but do you think it is the stepping stone here for the market broadly to see more development assets move into construction next year and the next couple of years?
Yeah, I mean, it's really project dependent and also commodity dependent. I mean, amount for the three that we discussed, I mean, Warintza is still a couple years before they can even get to the point where they could potentially press go. Aura Minerals, Borborema project, that is a go. So I do think we'll see first production there. Mount Todd is a beast of a project. So $20 million is just a drop in the bucket for what they need to actually build that thing. So in the case of these specifics, we'll see. Yeah, more generally, you really have to look at the price incentives. Like for copper, for instance, we're trading around $3.60, $3.70 a pound. To really see the big boys press go on the next wave of major new copper mines, we're going to need to see 525, 550 copper, if not quite a bit higher. I think it's well understood, well agreed upon within the industry that 525 range is where the incentive price is. But in past cycles, we've seen the actual spot price of the metals need to go up sometimes close to twice the incentive price before the big boys really get a move on. So I think particularly in the copper space, we need to see some significant price moves before we see, the next generation of mines really, really get rolling.
Well, Matt, just on this topic of strategic investments or different funds coming in the royalty space, we did see one other one of note, and it was with Star Royalties announcing that Cenovus Energy has taken a stake in the Green Star Royalties, which is a JV with themselves and Agnico Eagle. So this is on the carbon credit side of the royalty space. First of all, that's unique, just the royalties on carbon credits, but also it shows more money coming into the royalty sector. What do you make of that deal?
Yeah, well, I'm quite close to that deal. You know, for full disclosure, Star Royalties is one of our larger holdings within the fund, and we've been buying in the aftermath of that deal. Look, I mean, it's quite exciting from my perspective. Synovus, for those that don't know, is a $30 billion oil and gas company headquartered out of Calgary, and they cut a $21 million check to Star Royalties Green Star subsidiary. Green Star's focus specifically on carbon credit royalty and stream deals. So upon this investment, Synovus now joins Agnico Eagle as the second major strategic to have put money into Green Star. Agnico came in spring of 2022, and so it took a good 18 months for Green Star to find its next major strategic investor. But Synovus is coming in at a 50% premium to Agnico's initial investment, which I think caught quite a few folks by surprise, particularly given how poorly and carbon markets have performed over the past couple of years. So each of these companies now own, both Agnico and Synovus now own just under 26% of Green Star, with Star Royalties owning the rest, around 46%. The post-money valuation of Synovus' investment was around $82 million. So Star Royalties' stake in Green Star is equivalent to 50 cents per Star share. This, of course, assumes that Synovus paid a fair price. So there's still a pretty significant disconnect between Star's current trading price and where Synovus priced Green Star with this most recent financing. I mean, more generally, this does beg the question, you know, whether this deal could mark the bottom or at least some green shoots. It is what has been an absolutely abysmal 2 years for anybody involved in the carbon credit space. I would say the jury is still out, but I know for sure that many of Green Star's peers were actually thrilled to see this deal announced, you know, even though Green Star is technically one of their competitors. But the financing window for a lot of these carbon credit and royalty groups that, you know, seem to be spawning every month in 2021 has absolutely slammed shut. So these groups have largely been spinning their wheels for 2 years. They have a name, they have a company, most of them private, but they don't have any money to deploy. And I know one of the more credible competitors of Green Star, private competitors of Green Star, got close to closing a financing this past summer, but the deal fell apart at the 11th hour, just given how poorly carbon markets have performed over the past 18 to 24 months. So, you know, it's, again, jury's still out, but I think this could be a sign that, at least for the more credible carbon royalty and streaming operators, we could see some more capital coming in. And of course, from Green Star's perspective, I mean, this is an excellent countercyclical opportunity. You know, they now have $20 million to deploy into, you know, various options. I know they have a full deal pipeline solely focused on North America. And I expect they'll be pretty active here as most of their competitors just don't have the balance sheets to go out and do additional deals at the moment.
Yeah, well, as you said, a lot of these companies are celebrating the deal because it is a deal that is actually happening in the carbon market after all these companies were announced just over the last couple of years. But Matt, how do you even go about analyzing some of these carbon companies? That they're so new and the market is, it's out there, but the pricing model is confusing. All these companies, it's confusing to know what even assets they have. How do you go about even selecting a carbon company that you're getting into?
It is. And I know there's a lot of skepticism about the carbon credit space, and there should be. I mean, it is truly the Wild West out there. I think one point that's worth clarifying, and CEO of Star Royalties, Alex Pernin, you know, explains this well. It's best to think of the carbon credit market as one would think of the diamond market. There is technically an index called the CBL Nature-Based Global Emission Offset Index that tries to track carbon credit prices. And that indice, interestingly, is off an astounding 95% from early 2022. It reached up close to $19 per credit. It's now sub a dollar per credit. But it's important to note these are very low quality credits. These are kind of commoditized credits without really the ability to back. So that's not the way to look at the space. The credits that Star and the more credible groups are looking at literally are trading at 20 to 30x premiums to the credits that you see within the CBL nature-based index. So it's extremely important to know the project, know the operators, know the different counterparties, and there's just a massive spread between the value of individual credits, just as one would see within the diamond space. So I think part of the reason there's this perception of the carbon credit market absolutely being bombed out is this actual index, which is really the only index that you can follow. But that's actually, for the higher quality credits, prices have actually hung in there pretty well. So from STAR's perspective, it's less that they're able to, participate in distressed deals. It's more that just the competition for these higher quality credits is very low at the moment. So that's the excitement from their perspective. And I would just say, look, to the folks that are skeptical on the space, again, skepticism is warranted, but look at the strategics. Look at Agnico Eagle. Look at this oil and gas company, Cenovus, putting their money where their mouth is. Whether or not you even agree that global warming is a valid concern to be had, there is going to be tremendous demand for these credits going forward. And that's both from, regulatory compliance markets, with governments potentially forcing carbon credit, requirements on companies. I know there's some contention about that. But it'll also be in the voluntary market, companies going out of their way to purchase credits so that they can then tell their customers and consumers that they're a net neutral company. And I know some folks would say, well, that's just greenwashing and that, that shouldn't be taken at face value. And maybe that's the case, but it's still happening either way. So I think we're still in the very early stages of this market. I hope that the past 2 years has served as a bit of a culling period, both for the new entrants that we saw come in and during the hype days of 2021, and also in terms of lower quality projects that are out there. But I do believe that those that are able to survive this period are in actually very good position over the coming years. So this is our only carbon credit focused investment. STAR, of course, also comes with a mining royalty component as well that I would argue is worth between 20 to 30 cents per share on its own right. But from my perspective, STAR is through and through a carbon credit focused investment with a nice little mining kicker, which is receiving no value at the moment.
All right, Matt, we'll wrap it up here. Man, I find this coal carbon sector so interesting because there are so many companies that have gotten behind it, so many groups have gotten behind it. But as you said, kind of the wild, wild west. Remember, you can keep up to date with Matt over at the MJG Capital website, which we will link to within the weekend show posting. And everybody, thanks for tuning in on this weekend show. We hope you all have a great rest of your weekend. We will be back with some editorials throughout the week right before Christmas. Matt, everyone listening, again, thanks for your time this weekend. Hope you all have a great rest of your weekend.
For our upcoming appearance schedule, visit kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back in just a moment.
Advertising is simple. It starts with someone who has a need.
Mom!
And then gets more specific.
Mom, I want pizza.
Then we add urgency.
I want pizza tonight.
Before you know it, your GCN advertising message is reaching millions of listeners. Listeners who are definitely in need.
We want pizza!
You see, advertising on GCN is simple. Your message meets their need, and the result means new business for you. Tell us about your business, then let our super creative department go to work to craft just the right message to feed those who have an urgent need.
We want pizza tonight!
GCN has the most affordable national radio advertising rates, period. And millions of people listen to GCN radio programs on over 1,000 AM and FM and XM stations and streaming audio live. Get started today with GCN, the Genesis Communications Network. Just shoot us an email, advertise@gcnlive.com.
All across the country, people are coming together to speed up what we can learn about health. The All of Us Research Program is calling on 1 million people to join us as we try to change the future of health. For your family, for future generations, for all of us. Visit joinallofus.org and find out how you can become one in a million.
Are you curious about what might be missing from your diet and supplement choices?
Take a free health assessment to identify your possible nutrient deficiencies. As a certified holistic health coach, I will help you assess and prioritize a supplement program based on Dr. Wallach's recommendations. Call Linda at 833-VITAL-90. That number to call is 833-848-2590. That's 833-VITAL-90.